Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Kote in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I can confirm that the president has indeed exercised his powers as commander-in-chief of the Malawi Defense Force to order the commander of the Malawi Defense Force to start the process of withdrawing Malawian troops from Eastern DRC.
Malawian President Lazarus Chakwera orders the withdrawal of the country's troops from the Democratic Republic of Congo.
And Elections Cameroon is not a legislative organ that makes law. We apply the law as it is given to us. So the reforms that we are talking about, whatever reforms that the parliament gave us, we are using the same as such.
Cameroon's Electoral Commission official rejects criticisms that the institution lacks the independence and competence to administer credible polls.
We are confident that an appointment that will be done by a committee that is made up of all those that fall or that are stakeholders in a political spectrum, i.e. political parties, civil society organizations, student unions, faith-based organizations, worker unions, and the security service.
And a Ghanaian civil society group calls for a review of the law that enables the president to choose the top officials of the Electoral Commission. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Malawi's information minister says President Lazarus Chakwera has ordered the withdrawal of the country's troops from the Democratic Republic of Congo following discussions with President Felix Tshisekedi and a recent meeting of regional leaders. Moses Kunkunyu says the top commander of the Malawi Defense Forces has been ordered to begin the withdrawal process. It comes after a meeting of regional leaders demanded a ceasefire and urged dialogue to find a solution to the crisis in the eastern part of the DRC. This, as Southern Africa Development Community and East Africa Community regional leaders plan to meet on Saturday to discuss the DRC conflict. For more about the withdrawal of Malawian troops from the DRC, I reach Information Minister Moses Kunkunyu.
Yeah, I can confirm that the president has indeed exercised his powers as commander-in-chief of the Malawi Defense Force to order the commander of the Malawi Defense Force to start the process of withdrawing Malawian troops from Eastern DRC. That one I can confirm. You recall that last week, the president and other heads of state from Africa attended the Africa Energy Summit in Tanzania, and on the sidelines of that, we had a SADC Troika summit where a resolution was passed to call for a ceasefire from all parties in the conflict to pave way for peace negotiations. So since the ceasefire has been declared, the president has seen it fit to contribute to that peace-building effort by withdrawing from the region in very good faith.
Has the process begun in terms of the troops returning home?
No, that is now an operational issue, but the communication has gone. The president has also spoken to the executive secretary of SADC. He has also had a conversation with his counterpart, the DRC president, and what remains now are operational elements of the withdrawal.
Some people are suggesting that in spite of the call by SADC leaders for a ceasefire, fighting still goes on. So they find it quite odd. They said that in spite of the ongoing fighting, troops are being redrawn when the need to protect unarmed civilians by regional leaders is paramount.
The call for a ceasefire, if it is done in good faith, every party to that call should also believe that if it's done by good faith, then the outcome, the expected outcome from that call should be a positive outcome, which is a complete ceasefire and the stoppage of the fight. So the president believes that after the SADC Troika meeting, where there was that resolution to call for a ceasefire, and the subsequent declaration by the M23, one of the parties in the conflict, to call for a ceasefire, to pave way for peaceful negotiations, then the expectation of most of the leaders, including President Chakwera, is that the outcome of it will be positive. So to contribute further to that peace-building process, the withdrawal is in line with the same.
Is Malawi committed to pushing the process forward to the realization of peace in the eastern part of Congo following recent conversation between President Chakwera and Congolese President Felix Tshisekedi?
President Chakwera is keen, and he's always remained keen to see peace prevail in the SADC for advancement, of course, of regional integration. Because the president has always maintained his stance that peaceful negotiation is the way to go. The president very soon will be taking over the chairing of the SADC Troika organ and later this year. So it is in that spirit that he has always believed that being a leader and being leaders, we must always advance the card of peace. Malawi has been in several peacekeeping missions, and that comes when the services are required and the consideration is done to cases by case consideration. So looking into the future, the president remains an advocate for peaceful negotiations, and where need be, and after considering cases that might be, which God forbid they shouldn't come again, but considering case by case, the president will continue exercising his powers to make decisions that are appropriate at a given time.
Moses Kunkunyu is Malawi's information minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. A joint meeting of regional leaders from the Southern African Development Community, or SADC, and the East Africa Community, or EAC, is scheduled for Saturday. The aim is to find solutions to the conflict in the eastern part of the DRC. It comes after the M23 rebels seized the regional capital, Goma. At their last summit, the SADC heads of state expressed concern about the deteriorating security situation in Goma after the rebels captured it. The leaders also demanded an immediate ceasefire and dialogue to resolve the conflict. For the latest development and expectations for Saturday's summit, I reach Herbert Kabasu Katulondi. He is a former governor of Central Kasai Province in the DRC, as well as an author and a political commentator.
Well, we would have expected, ideally, that the head of state from these two regional blocs can eventually harmonize the view so that a peaceful negotiated settlement to the crisis can occur. Unfortunately, we don't see that happening because of Mr. Tshisekedi himself. He doesn't want to talk to M23. He doesn't want to talk to Alliance Fleuve Congo. So it's going to be very difficult. That's the first challenge. The second challenge is military.
There have been issues of SADC in trying to ease the political tension, South African soldiers' involvement. There have been accusations and counter-accusations from the government in Rwanda and that in Pretoria in South Africa. How do you think this will go with all these issues?
Well, it seems right now that the National Defense, I think Andy Mocheka, and I think the General Chief of Staff, they were summoned into a meeting of the committee that covers or oversees national defense. Now, they've given a version of facts that will ease actually tension, because they say Rwanda didn't deliberately fire South African soldiers. It was Rwanda reacting to fires by the Congolese army FRDC that had attacked Rwanda. So Rwanda had reacted. So Rwanda did intentionally fire or attack South African soldiers. So they seem to have sort of harmonized their own point of view. And I don't see that tensions between them will continue. However, tensions may occur regarding the Sami DRC troops, which will be reinforced by SADC, including South Africa, and EAC. EAC, East Africa Community, they have an argument according to which SADC should have consulted them before sending troops there. Because in the region, it seems now that SADC is on the wrong side, according to EAC leaders. So we don't see an outcome propitious for peace in the Congo or the region.
isn't there a way, in your view, that these two regional bodies can harmonize what they think is the best way forward?
The Nairobi process that was facilitated by a former Kenyan president, Uhuru Kenyatta, and the Luanda process being facilitated by Angolan President Lourenco, all these processes, all these mechanisms entail or call for direct talks between President Tshisekedi and the leaders of IFC and M23. However, Mr. Tshisekedi seems to have made it his own personal issue. He doesn't want to talk to M23. Therefore, when any person speaks in terms of peaceful negotiation, there will be a problem because Mr. Tshisekedi said that is a route that he doesn't want to envisage.
So, in your view, direct talks between the government in Kinshasa and the M23, or do you think that is the only way to resolve the conflict?
Yes, because the IFC, which is the political wing, superstructure of M23, they've got a point. So the Congolese want to sit and say, how do we, what is the way forward with regard to our grievances? So if Mr. Tshisekedi goes there and all these EAC and SADC get to persuade him to accept direct talks with M23 and IFC, then that would be a good development.
Herbert Kabasu Katulondi is a former governor of Central Kasai Province in the DRC, as well as an author and political commentator. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. In the DRC, the head of the Goma-based civil society group called Promoting Youth Education, or PYE, says reactions are mixed about the call for direct talks between the government in Kinshasa and the M23 rebels. Alain Maboko says opinions are also divided over whether President Félix Tshisekedi should participate in the joint SADC and EAC regional leaders meeting scheduled for Saturday. The meeting aims to help find solutions to the ongoing conflict in the eastern part of the DRC, where the M23 rebels captured the regional capital, Goma. Promoting Youth Education is a youth-led organization that works for social cohesion and inclusion in Goma. For the latest development following calls for direct talks between the government and the M23, I reach Alain Maboko.
There are two different views on this because the civil society itself, it is divided. Each group is having their own opinion. Some are for the talk straight between the M23 and the government, but the other group is like, no, this is not a good idea.
So, Alain, what is the situation there currently after the M23 rebels seized Goma?
Many are curious. They will hear about M23 guys, but they have never seen them, like, how do they look like? So people were like rushing to the Stade de l'Unité, trying to meet those guys. But some also was like, okay, as we are not accepted to go for work or to run our business, after 9 or 10, people were not accepted to run their business. Yet they work down Birere. Birere is a commercial area in the city, which is like very hot point. So the stadium, it is by the main road going to Birere. So people said, okay, let's profit this opportunity. As we are walking on foot and we'll be passing by there, let us move as they will be done and then we'll join our business. As you know here, this taxi driver, the Boda Boda drivers, are the one who will circulate the news around the city.
This weekend, the regional leaders from SADC and the EAC are meeting to try to find a solution to the ongoing conflict in the eastern part of the country, including the regional capital, Goma. What are your expectations, and what are the expectations of people in Goma about the summit?
As things are moving forward, this summit was scheduled, and at the point here it is, people would like him to join there because wise men will say here, a man of sin will never leave justice. You know, this is what people say in the street here. It's like the guilty person will stay guilty in this. So he should be going, and by the end of the day, we'll get to know who is wrong and who is right. But still, there will be those who will still saying, we are not going to agree that the president go and attend this. Maybe he will be sending some people as a delegation, but him in person, it's not a good idea. Still, again, once again, this is, you know, two different camps. People are arguing on this.
So people are split on whether the president should even attend the summit or not.
Yeah, sure. People are really split, and people even quarrel. You can see people in the street and say, I am for that, and that. I will say, no, I am not for that, because it will be like a betrayal if he goes, so we wish he wouldn't go. But some other will still say that a fish will never know how fresh is water if it does not go deeper. So to know how water feels, how water is, somebody should drop in to know how life in water is. So he should go there to discover what is going on.
Alain Maboko is the CEO of the Goma Bay civil society group called Promoting Youth Education, or PYE. He spoke with me from Goma in DRC. An official of Elections Cameroon, or ELECAM, rejects criticisms that the institution lacks the independence and competence to administer credible polls in the Central African country. Barrister Mbufong Marcel Kumfa, an ELECAM legal advisor, says the electoral body interprets the law in organizing elections and denies allegations that officials are opposed to reforms to ensure transparency ahead of elections. His remarks come as the electoral body prepares to organize this year's polls. But critics say since its formation in 2006, ELECAM has been biased in favor of the ruling Cameroon People's Democratic Movement, or CPDM. Officials reject the allegations as false and without merit. For more reaction to the criticisms, I reach Barrister Mbufong Marcel Kumfa via Microsoft Teams.
I want to say Elections Cameroon is being run by a law passed by Parliament, law number 2012/001 of 19 April 2012, which was amended and supplemented by law number 2012/017 of 21st December 2012. But I want to say that the law aforesighted was enacted by the legislature, and Elections Cameroon is not a legislative organ that makes law. We apply the law as it is given to us. So the reforms that we are talking about, or whatever reforms that the parliament gave us, we are using same as such. Now, but if there's time for any amendment or reforms, I think the appropriate quarter to be touched should be the executive bench and the legislative arm of the government, who have the political orientation to carry on amendment into the law.
So, Barrister, there are calls for a digitalized and computerized electoral system to ensure transparency and accountability. What are your thoughts on that as a senior official of the Elections Cameroon?
I think the issue of computerization and digitization is what is already taking place in Elections Cameroon. The computerization was even started in 2007. It started in 2007 when election issues were being managed by the administration, that is Ministry of Territorial Administration. With the coming into force placed by Elections Cameroon, the digitalization came into operation in 2012 when we skipped from manual registration to biometric registration. And now you see that in Elections Cameroon, all the registration, treatment of data, establishment of electoral registers are all digital and computerized.
So what are your thoughts on calls, especially from civil society and other opposition groups who are saying that citizens who are 18 years old should be able to vote just like in any other democracies on the continent and around the world?
Thank you very much, Peter. I want to say that this issue of minimum age to vote is not universal all around the world. Each and every country has its own limited age that somebody is supposed to vote. For instance, in countries like Brazil and Argentina, you know that minors of 16 years old can vote. And in some other countries, some people can even vote less than 16 years who are married on conditions. So in Cameroon, the law I first of all cited here has made it that our own voting age in Cameroon is 20. And 20 is nearer to the age of majority. In some countries, like in United Arab Emirates, the minimum voting age is 25 years. So if Cameroon legislature thought it wise that the voting age for Cameroon should be 20 years, I don't see anything wrong with it because there's no universal age for a minimum vote, for a minimum age for a voter to vote.
What are your thoughts on calls for the introduction of the use of a single ballot paper for the presidential election as part of the effort to ensure transparency, accountability, and to avoid waste? Because most people are saying that a lot of money is spent in having multiple ballot papers during election period. What are your thoughts?
I think the issue of transparency does not really lie with the issue of the ballot papers. The whole process itself should be transparent because there are so many methods of casting vote. There is e-voting. There is single ballot paper, there is multiple ballot paper, there is digital voting. And if a country, each country deems necessary to choose the method of casting ballot that they want, and if in Cameroon they have decided on multiple ballot paper, I think the most important issue is whether the process is carried on genuinely without any stress or whatsoever, to make sure that everybody who is willing to vote casts his vote for their leaders to be chosen. So it's not an issue of single ballot paper that brings the transparency, but the mind of the people who are partakers into the process itself. So the single ballot paper or multiple ballot paper or whatsoever is not really a point in issue. And secondly, as I earlier said, it is the legislature that makes the law, and at elections, Cameroon is only there to apply the law.
Barrister Mbufong Marcel Kumfa is an Elecam legal advisor. He spoke with me from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé. You can hear the second part of my conversation with Mbufong Marcel Kumfa tomorrow. Still in Cameroon, a political analyst is proposing a political third option to help resolve the challenges facing the country. Nick Ngwanyam says the country should maintain President Paul Biya by replacing members of its entire government with seasoned Cameroonian technocrats from around the world who have the know-how to solve the country's problems. Cameroon has more than 30 registered political parties that will be competing in the coming general election. Ngwanyam says long-term President Biya is likely to win the presidential contest due to the dominance of the governing CPDM and the weakness of opposition groups. Nick Ngwanyam tells me that a political third option is the best way to resolving the problems facing Cameroon.
So option one would be to have His Excellency President Paul Biya go in as a candidate with his current government and directors and ministers and everybody as they are. And this option is what has been there for a long time, and people are not very happy with it because problems have not been solved. Now, the second option is people are expecting that an opposition leader should take over. And if that were to happen, probably there would not be too much trouble. But unfortunately, the opposition is too weak and unable to do that. And that's where people are having a lot of headaches. And so the opposition is not up to task. Now, the third option is something that I crafted out of the toolbox. I started it, and what is it all about? Have President Paul Biya, as the grandfather of the nation, sit there as the president, then change all ministers and directors and bring in new people, fresh blood. And it must be people who are technocrats and entrepreneurs to be able to solve the problems of the nation. That's it.
This is a very unique way of looking at it. Does this have a groundswell of support, or the discussion is only among the elite in Cameroon?
The bottom line is, it's the only solution under the current situation.
But do you think it is feasible, looking at the context of politics in Cameroon?
You see, the problem is you have the president and you have the government, and they work as a team. And so in every negotiations, you look for a win-win situation. So we are saying that we are going to take half of what President Paul Biya has to offer, the current situation has to offer, which is taking President Paul Biya, then go to the general public and bring in technocrats and entrepreneurs who can solve the problems. So you bring part from the current government now, which is President Paul Biya, and you leave his baggage out of the story, and then you go to the other side, or you just go to the general public and the diaspora and so on. And when choosing the technocrats and the entrepreneurs, you are not looking at their party leanings. You are looking for people who have the capacity to solve the problems. That's the bottom line.
But the question is, do you think opposition groups and critics of the administration will accept this option? Because they have been fighting tooth and nail to take the helms of government, because they say that President Paul Biya and his administration, since coming into power in 1986, have not been, you know, in the early 1980s, have not been able to resolve the challenges facing the country.
Yes, I mean, we understand that the problems are there. There are a lot of youths with no jobs. The economy is not very good. There's something that needs to be done about the development, the economy, everything. Name whatever comes to your head and you will have it. But the bottom line is, you can insult Biya from morning to evening, that changes nothing. The bottom line is, there have been people there who cannot solve the problems, and we are saying that there is a third option which can offer solutions, and either you take it or you leave it, because just changing, just going for elections and having the same team and everything there changes absolutely nothing and just gets us down the drain.
What are your thoughts on the coming elections organized by ELECAM?
I don't know, but the bottom line is that the president will win. Why would he win? Because the opposition is weak. That's the bottom line. And if one could give advice to the opposition, one would say, number one, that they should come together and form one team and put up a strong leader who can challenge the president. And secondly, they should be very consistent and tell people the kind of solutions they'll be bringing as far as the politics, the economics, the development, and the education are concerned. But when you listen to them over the 30 years that they have been existing, you know, most of the time they only bring out a list of the things that the president and his government were not able to do, but unfortunately they don't tell you how they should solve problems. So the greatest weakness is they don't tell you how they will solve problems. You know, and even AI can generate the catalogs of mishaps of the CPDM. Just generating mishaps and then throwing eggs at the other side is not solving the problems. People are interested in their problems being solved, and as long as you cannot demonstrate the capacity to solve problems, you're wasting your time.
Nick Ngwanyam is a political analyst. He spoke with me from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé. Uganda has announced the deployment of 1,000 troops to help the administration in Kinshasa combat the Islamist group called the Allied Defense Forces, or ADF. It comes as the DRC government calls for international intervention after the M23 rebels captured the eastern regional capital, Goma. The additional Ugandan troops also come as the East African country helps the DRC to combat the ADF rebels. For analysis about the latest development, I reach Emma Mutaizibwa. He is a lawyer and a security analyst in Uganda.
Uganda, as you're aware, already has troops deployed in the DRC, in the eastern part, which is one of the most volatile pockets in the world. And this came about after Uganda signed a bilateral deal with the DR Congo a few years ago. The two defense ministers of their respective countries signed this bilateral deal to get the troops into eastern part of DR Congo. So in essence, as a result of the recent attacks in Goma, Uganda sought the approval of DR Congo to send another 1,000 troops near South Kivu, where the M23 currently is positioned to move into. So in essence, the Ugandan army said it's taking a defensive posture to deal with the recent insecurity in the DR Congo. But largely, the Ugandan force has been in the Congo to fight against the Allied Democratic Forces, which is an Islamist insurgent group based in the eastern part of Congo.
The question is, do you think the deployment would have any significant impact in helping to ease the conflict as you have it now in the eastern part of DRC?
To answer your question is you have to look back at the history of the eastern Congo and the specter of violence that continues to hang over the DR Congo. If you recall, in the late 1990s and early 2000s, there was a major conflagration in the DRC, which a French writer, Gerard Prunier, called Africa's Third World War, where, you know, as you're aware, when Mobutu was ousted, Kabila came to power, and he was later assassinated. There was a war where many countries of Africa were sucked in, and later on, Uganda and Rwanda, which were initially allies, fought in Kisangani in three battles, Kisangani 1, 2, and 3. So the specter of a regional conflict continues to haunt the region. There's been an arms race, and there are fears that the situation prevailing now in the DRC is some kind of powder keg. A spark could inflame it to, you know, and we could have a regional conflict. I remember that Burundi is also currently deployed in the DR Congo, and their president the other day warned that there could be a situation which could escalate into a regional war. And as you are aware, the president of Burundi and the president of Rwanda are currently at loggerheads. The genocidaires who are in eastern Congo.
The FDLR, as some people suggest, do not have the necessary capacity to trouble Rwanda as is being alleged. But the question now is, what do you think is the best way forward from the Ugandan perspective that can ease this problem? What is the best way forward?
So I'll first answer what you allege, that Rwanda basically shouldn't be bothered about FDLR. I think Rwanda should be bothered in the context that they've been trying to build a cordon sanitaire across the border. And because they fear that FDLR elements would destabilize their country first and foremost. Remember, that part of the border with Congo is the bastion of tourism for Rwanda. So any incursions could, you know, pose challenges. But coming back to the last bit of your question about Uganda's role, is the only way out, in my view, is... the situation should not escalate into warfare. Both the East African community, including Uganda and SADC, including the countries in Southern Africa, because, for instance, Tanzania belongs uniquely to both to the East African and SADC blocs, should look for a peaceful settlement, not the piecemeal kind of deals that soon break will break and then we'll get back to disintegrate and we'll get back to war. But a peaceful settlement to ensure that the ethnic groups, including the Tutsi, can coexist and are not taken as nationals, as part of the national ethnicities in DRC and many other tribes in the Congo, that we have a lasting deal, and that peace as an alternative of war is what should be pursued in this regard.
Emma Mutaizibwa is a lawyer and a security analyst in Uganda. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. Switzerland has announced plans to end its development aid to Eritrea. This after citing frustrations with the Horn of Africa country's refusal to take back rejected asylum seekers. It comes as Switzerland works to return citizens to their home countries after their asylum petitions have been rejected. The announcement is generating debate from both supporters of the administration in Asmara and critics. Supporters say Eritrea has the right to refuse to accept non-citizens who claim that they are from the country. But critics also say the decision to suspend development aid undermines the administration's narrative that Eritrea does not accept foreign aid. For analysis, I reach Emmanuel Biadi Mariam. He is a political analyst and the author of the book titled Eritrea. The struggle is long and victory is certain.
Well, there are so many reactions to this. Number one is that this is kind of a reflection of what the United States is doing, what the Trump administration is doing. They're basically mimicking that. They want to apply pressures on countries to take back their citizens. And that is one. Secondly, the aid or the development assistance or the development program Switzerland has with Eritrea is very minimal, extremely minimal. $7 million annually is not going to be any kind of enticement for Eritrea to change its policies. Third, a lot of the asylum seekers that went to Europe, a lot of European parliamentarians have spoken out against what their governments were doing, because majority of the political asylum seekers, just because they say that they are Eritreans, the government of Eritrea has to be sure that they are Eritreans in order to return them. So,
some of the critics of the administration in Asmara are saying that as the Asmara government boasts of not receiving or not taking any aid from any quarter, irrespective of where they come from, and prides itself in not receiving aid, and that has been the mantra. Then it comes to this report that at least they are receiving what you said, $7 million in aid. So people are saying, on one hand, the government says it does not receive aid from anywhere. On the other hand, it is receiving aid. So where does the truth lie? Some of the critics are asking.
Okay. Well, it's not aid. It's a development assistance, so development educational programs. I think this was an educational program. The Eritrea has how countries can. So Eritrea does not take any kind of aid that is meant to cripple or take away the self-reliance aspect of what Eritrea does. What Eritrea does is partnership, try to get partnership, loans, those kinds of things from international banks and those kinds of things. Those were the ones that were denied to Eritrea for a long time. There were countries like Switzerland that wanted to open up that door, and so they come up with this development assistance programs, the development partnership programs is what they are. Eritrea is very aware, very sensitive about taking any kind of aid from any country, because it all comes with conditionalities which the government of Eritrea does not accept.
Emmanuel, critics say for decades that Eritrea has loudly boasted about its so-called policy of self-reliance, portraying itself as a nation that shuns foreign aid and stands proudly on its own. But they said in reality, this has been nothing more than a hollow show of bravado, a self-deception that has done little more than entrench its repressive regime. Do you think their assertion is legitimate?
The 7 million, it's for a vocational training program in Eritrea, aiming to train about 350 individuals annually in trades such as carpentry, metalwork, electrical work. So we're basically getting education to do some work that Eritreans need. It's like feed someone, you feed them for a day, show them how to fish, and they, you know, they feed themselves for life. And so this is basically the kind of self-reliance strategy that any country can utilize when dealing with any country. So if you aid, traditionally means food, but you know, this education, technology, and those kinds of things, that's, you know, to bring Eritrea at par with the world. One of Eritrea's aims is to bring Eritrea to become a nation that's knowledge-based, whether it's the economy, whether it's the technology, and so there is a lot of investment and education in Eritrea. You're talking about education throughout the entire educational program up into universities. No Eritrean pays anything for education.
Emmanuel Bidi Mariam is a political analyst and the author of the book Eritrea, The Struggles is Long and Victory is Certain. He spoke with me from here in Washington. In Ghana, a civil society group is calling for a review of the law that enables the president to choose top officials of the Electoral Commission to ensure transparency and accountability. The Constitution allows the president to appoint the head of the electoral body and two deputies. Care for Free and Fair Elections, or CARE, says any process of appointing new commissioners should be reformed to reflect the will of the people. It comes after sections of the population demanded the resignation or firing of the chairperson of the Electoral Commission and the two deputies. They accused them of bias against the recently elected government. The top election officials deny the accusations. David Kumi is the executive director of CARE Ghana. He tells me that there must be reforms that will safeguard the integrity of the Electoral Commission.
We've always had challenges with who becomes the Electoral Commissioner and then the two deputies. There have always been accusations one way or the other by political parties in opposition and then members of political parties in opposition. There have also been some allegations about the neutrality and the independence of the electoral commissioners, that is the EC chairperson, and then the deputies. People have always believed that there are some political influence that derail the neutrality and the independence of the commission. Whether true or not, every time the decision by the commission is put in question, and we believe that it is because of the way the appointments are done.
So in this case, with this call by people to have the top officials of the Electoral Commission replaced, what is the sense of ensuring transparency in the process?
In our estimation, or in our thinking, we believe that it should be more inclusive, more transparent. What we are considering is an appointment that will be done by a committee that is made up of all those that falls or that are stakeholders in a political spectrum, i.e. political parties, civil society organizations, student unions, faith-based organizations, worker unions, and the security service. If all these stakeholders are made to present two people each to form a committee, and this committee, yeah, that represents the interest of the entire nation and the people of the country, they nominate about three people, that is among them or outside. So if I say three people, I mean that three for each of the positions, the Electoral Commission chairperson and the two deputies. So when these nine is nominated, then among them will elect who becomes the chairperson, who becomes the first deputy, and who becomes the second deputy. I believe with this, people will have confidence and trust in the neutrality of the Electoral Commission. That will enhance the integrity of the commission and then our electoral system. And also people will believe that these individuals will be transparent because it wasn't elected or appointed by an individual who is also contesting the elections or have interest in the election.
Are these people who are being critical, are their concerns legitimate? Because the chairperson of the Electoral Commission or the Electoral Commission just administered an election where an opposition leader defeated the incumbent vice president to become the president of Ghana. Doesn't that show that it's the people who decide who the president is and not necessarily the umpire, in this case, the chairperson of the Electoral Commission?
You see, when you listen to what people are saying, and I'm sure you've seen some of the calls that are calling on President Mahama to ensure that the chairperson is removed, they believe that the elections were won overwhelmingly by the decision of people, which prevented the Electoral Commission to be able to do anything, because they have believed that some of the things that occurred prior to the elections were orchestrated by the commission to aid the then government to continue to stay in power. And those allegations were one of the things that they are citing for the call of the head of the commissioner. and then her deputies. So we believe that if we are able to cure that, that those that are put in the high position of the Electoral Commission are selected by the people, nominated by representatives of the people, and are elected by the representatives of the people. And also, after this election, they are to go to Parliament for approval. And Parliament is occupied by representatives of the people. So it enhances transparency and it becomes more inclusive.
Does that mean that the law that gives the president or the appointing authority to decide who becomes the head of the Electoral Commission be amended in order to ensure that this trend doesn't continue?
Yes, obviously, that is what we are calling for. So if it happens like that, then people will have confidence and trust, even in the decisions by the commission. Every 10 elections boils down to the outcome of the elections itself. It must be credible. It must be accepted by all. And if it will be accepted by all, the people must have trust and confidence that the Electoral Commission is neutral and then it is not partisan.
David Kumi is the executive director of CARE Ghana. He spoke with me from the capital, Accra. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Ah!
That was Music from the Continent, and we hope you enjoyed. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. From the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Mogwill Yabaro, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, when the power to hold the rain is given to the man who sells umbrellas, there will never be sunshine. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa. Money no day, she go back a lot to go. No matter what day you give her, she no go appreciate you. I be on your kima. If you not get smoke worry, she go begin call mama. She go begin call papa. She go there shout, I don't die, your mama.